God bless you, and welcome to Spirit and Truth Fellowship International's audio podcast. Our goal is to provide you with Bible-based teachings that will help you walk in a transforming relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. We hope you will be inspired by what you're about to hear.
Welcome to this teaching, which I've titled, The Wise, the Fool, and the Wicked. In this teaching, we're going to take some time to delve into the book of Proverbs and look at these three main characters that God has laid out for us. Characters that if we study in detail, we will be able to see what are their characteristics and traits that make a person, from God's perspective, to be wise, a fool, or wicked. The book of Proverbs is a book of words to rule life. That's what the word proverb means. In English, we oftentimes think of proverbs as cute sayings or little quips, something like we see many times. I know that in my household, we have a little book of little sayings in the bathroom, you know, little bathroom readers. But that's not what the book of Proverbs is. God has given us the book of Proverbs so that we can gain insight by having words to use to rule life. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 3, speaking of the Proverbs, the words to rule life, this is what God says, that these words are for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right, just, and fair. A number of years ago, a man said to me once, Dan, what would it be worth to you if every decision you made was right? Now think about that for a second. If every time you made a decision, every time you spent a dollar, every time you made an investment, every time you said something to someone or gave relational advice or whatever, spoke to your boss, your children, your spouse, if everything that you decided in life was right, what would that be worth? Well, it would probably make you the richest man on the planet. You know, just if every investment you made proved out to be right. I mean, I just think of all the waste and the times in my life where I've made wrong decisions. I've followed the wrong paths. Well, God has given us the book of Proverbs to help us so that we make right decisions. Certainly, there's no guarantee that when we apply wisdom that everything we do will be right. But it absolutely will put us on the right path if we apply God's wisdom and learn to allow these words to help govern or rule our life. In Proverbs chapter 2, verse 6, he says, speaking of wisdom and applying these words, then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. That's the theme of Proverbs, to gain wisdom, to understand what is right, what is just, what is fair, and every good path. And certainly if we are going to be able to do that, we have got to be able to have a proper understanding of the three principal characters in life. There's times when we can be wise. From God's perspective, he says there's times that we are fools, and there are also times if we behave with certain behaviors that he considers it evil or wicked. Why do this teaching? Well, I realized a number of years ago that one of the hallmarks of a mature person is an ability to discern, an ability to judge right from wrong. And that's what Proverbs helps us do. It helps us to understand the difference between wisdom and foolishness, right from wrong, good from evil. To discern is the ability to perceive clearly with my mind or my senses so that I'm not deceived. How many times have you been deceived in life by the characters and the people of which you interact with? I think of the times in which I've dealt with a businessman in which I entered into a bad deal because I didn't discern it properly. I was not looking at all the signs, the red flags that were present. I was just bumbling along, probably because of ignorance or because I desired a result more than I was paying attention to the signposts that were present. Well, Proverbs helps us by teaching us to perceive truth from error. That's how we can live rightly. I believe now is a time in which God's people are in dire need of proper discernment, more than any other time. It used to be in times past where evil was very obvious. Now, I know that in biblical times there was such a prevalence of evil, sexual immorality, idolatry, and other things, that people just took it for granted. But certainly nowadays, things have become very confused. In Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20, Isaiah says to the people, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." That sounds to me like it's describing present-day Western civilization. Those who call evil good and good evil. I believe people are being bombarded with error. Things are becoming confused. This next generation that's coming up right now is being conditioned to accept anything and everything. After all, quote, "Who are you to judge?" But see, that again is not properly applying and discerning what the words of the Lord were. He said, "Judge not, lest ye be judged," but the point was that our judgment be clear, that the light that we have inside not be darkness. The point of that phrase that he used is that when we judge, we need to judge clearly, and the light, the way in which we rule our life, must be truth, not error. In Proverbs chapter 3, verse 21, it says, "My son, preserve sound judgment and discernment. Do not let them out of your sight." The point of this teaching is discernment. Discernment specifically regarding our own behaviors and the behaviors of those that we interact with. Proverbs 10:13 again says, "Wisdom is found on the lips of the discerning." That's what we want to be. God wants us to grow up. Jesus Christ said, "Go make disciples." Now, the epitome of discipleship is a mature disciple, someone who has proper discernment, who perceives clearly, who is able to separate truth from error. That's the point of Hebrews chapter 5, verse 14. But solid food is for the mature, who by constant use have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil. Distinguishing good from evil oftentimes does take training. It takes discipline. That's one of the points of the book of Proverbs. This is not something that you just learn or listen to one time. You acquire a knowledge of the traits of foolishness or wicked behavior and then think that you know it. I've been applying the disciplines of this subject for over 10 years, and I still am constantly making mistakes. I'm getting better, but it's only because I'm training myself to distinguish good from evil. Philippians chapter 1, 9 through 10 says, "And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight." Insight, again, is discernment. First, we have to have knowledge, and then we have to apply that knowledge through discipline and training, as Hebrews 5:14 said. Verse 10 in Philippians goes on to say, "So that you may be able to discern what is best." Oftentimes, the path that's right, the path that's just and fair, the good path, is an ability of discerning what's best. There's lots of good things that are out there, but we don't want good. We don't want average. God wants for us best, and therefore that's what we want to do too. And certainly when we deal with God's people, with any person, they deserve our best. As I mentioned, I've studied this topic of the wise, the fool, and the wicked for over a decade now. My study was first prompted by a book written by Joel Freeman called Kingdom Zoology. It's kind of a cute little book, and in it, Joel goes through and describes various animals which God uses to metaphorically apply to human behavior. For instance, in Galatians, we talk about those dogs. Well, what are the characteristics of dogs that Paul was trying to refer to? God has also called his people sheep. And so in this book, Joel, would go off and talk about sheep and what sheep would represent. We know in the Word of God, he also talks about wolves that are among you. Well, what are the characteristics of wolves? You know, what type of predator are they really? We have an enemy, a lion, walking about, roaring, and seeking whom he may devour. So God has used a lot of the animals from the natural kingdom to describe traits of human behavior. But one of the things that I found very electrifying as I read Joel's book was a center section in which he did a study on five Hebrew words which can generally be classified as fool. Now, in the English, we have translated a couple of these words as fool, and when you're reading your Bible, you really don't know which Hebrew word it is. There's a few others that are translated as the simple, or another one as the mocker or scorner. But as I've studied this topic, I've began to realize that really these are all characteristics of foolish behavior, and that there's a pattern that God is revealing to us. There's five Hebrew words, three of which I think we can properly understand as fools, and the last two, which I believe should be properly categorized as evil or wickedness. The final pieces of this teaching came together for me when I was recently at a conference where one of the guest speakers was Henry Cloud. Now, Henry Cloud is famous. He has a partner, John Townsend, and it's Townsend Cloud, who have written a number of books on boundaries and different relational books on how Christians should be able to handle themselves, how to set up proper boundaries, behavioral issues. And in this conference, Henry Cloud was doing a presentation on how we can deal with three different types of people. Now, previous to this, I'd done the study on the five fools of Proverbs, but it was in Henry's teaching where I realized that really a proper understanding of fools, the last two being evil, has to be set in opposition to the wise. One of the points that Henry Cloud made is that in most businesses, there's always that guy. You know, that one person who's in the office who seems to be the single source of problems, who typically is doing a behavior that's causing some hopelessness amongst others. Well, in Henry's teaching, he identified these three types, and then I saw how with the knowledge of the five fools, we can take his presentation even further. In this teaching, as I mentioned, we're going to look at what is the distinguishing characteristic of a wise person. How does God define the wise? Then we're going to look at the first three types of fools. We'll look at their traits, their characteristics, and how we need to interact with them. And then also you'll see that there's going to be an increasing paradigm, a pattern of sinfulness and pridefulness that's present. And then in the last part of this teaching, we're going to look at the evil or wicked. That's the last two types of foolishness. And we'll look at their traits and how we need to interact with them. First, though, let me remind everybody, the basic understanding of this is that every one of us, at times, acts wise, foolishly, or wickedly. So one way in which to apply this teaching is to look at yourself. How does this apply to you? When is it that you're being foolish? And what type of fool are you being in that moment? The point is, you can interrupt it. And if you are continuing to have a pattern of sinfulness in your life, then you need to pay careful attention to that. Because at some point, if not interrupted, it can actually become evil or wickedness. And from God's perspective, if you do evil, if you do wicked, then you are wicked. That's just how he calls it out. The good news is, how we act is always our choice. I know that many times we are reactive, but when interrupted, when you become aware of it, then you have a choice, because you are always in control of you. First, let's look at the wise. What is a wise person? How does God define it? I think there's a very basic understanding. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because I want to devote most of this teaching to the fools aspect of it. But what is a wise person? From God's perspective, a wise person is not a person who knows a lot. Today, we might think of a college professor as being wise if they've got extensive knowledge, say in anthropology or biology, whatever their specialty may be. That's not necessarily how God defines it, though. A wise person's not based on how much they know. It's based on how they relate to truth. Now, from a very simple understanding, we would say that that college professor is wise concerning biology because he has great knowledge of truth concerning biology. But the basic understanding of a wise person, as God defines it, is it's a person who embraces truth. It's a person who seeks understanding. They want to know. They want to know the truth about the world around them, about themselves, and about others. Let's look at Proverbs 18, verse 15. The heart of the discerning acquires knowledge. The ears of the wise seek it out. See, there's the hallmark of the wise person. They're basically truth seekers. They may not know the truth, but they're seeking the truth, and that's what makes them wise. In Proverbs 1, 5, let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. And also in Proverbs 1:9, instruct a wise man, and he'll be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, and he will add to his learning. Why is it that when you instruct a wise man, he gets wiser still? Or why is it that God says, let the wise listen and then add to their learning? It's because they want to know. They seek truth. They're open to it. They're receptive. Think about a time in your life where someone's come to you and you've been open to their feedback. They've said, you know, I have something to tell you. It might even hurt your feelings, but I really need to let you know this. Now, sometimes I know that I've reacted by like, oh my gosh, I don't want to hear it. But generally, if you're being wise, what do? Well, you see the person's body posture. They lean forward. They're almost like hands open, eyes wide. Please tell me, what am I missing here? What don't I see? Their attitude is, help me to improve. You know, what am I doing wrong? And they want to know the truth. That's why in Proverbs 12:15, it says, the way of a fool seems right to him, but a wise man listens to advice. That's the hallmark of the wise. Always remember, when you're seeking the truth, when you're open to the truth, when you want to know the truth, then you're being wise. And the wise person always adjusts their behavior in accordance to the feedback. It's not just that they want to know. In the beginning of Proverbs, it talked about a disciplined life. And a wise person always applies the truth that they've learned. Now let's move into the second aspect of this teaching where we're going to spend the majority of the time. This is on the topic of the fool. As I mentioned, there's five Hebrew words that refer to various levels of foolish behavior. The first three words in English, I think we could properly call fool. The last two words should be more properly categorized as evil or wicked. Later in the teaching, I can make it very clear what is the characteristic that distinguishes the two. But for clarity's sake, let me say that the first three words that should be, I believe, a best way to understand it is there's simple fools, unreasonable fools, and stubborn fools. Now, just in those words alone, you can see there's an increasing level here. A simple fool, then the unreasonable fool, and then the stubborn fool. So let's take on first the simple fool. What is a simple fool? The Hebrew word used to refer to a simple fool is pethe. And this word actually is translated in many English Bibles as simple. And it's referring to if I always think of like the jester in the court, kind of the simple little bumbling idiot in some ways. I use that word idiot loosely here. And so in Proverbs 7:7, let's take a look at that. I saw among the simple I noticed among the young men a youth who lacked judgment. Now there is exactly the definition of a simple fool. It's a person who lacks judgment. Why do they lack judgment? Because they're just ignorant. They don't know. I think of a child. We all are familiar with children. And as a child grows up, when, you know, a 1 or 2 year old, 3 year old, they just don't know. One of the reasons we need to protect a child around a swimming pool is they don't realize the danger that's inherent in a swimming pool. They have no understanding of drowning. They have very little understanding of what water even is and to be immersed like that. That's a simple fool. In Proverbs 14:15, it says, "A simple man believes anything, but a prudent man gives thought to his steps." Now, why is the simple person believing anything? See, that's a level of gullibility. Someone is gullible. They accept things as truth that are false because they don't know. They've never been rightly instructed. The characteristics of the simple fool are that they're naive. They're just generally open-minded, gullible, and like I said, they lack knowledge, understanding. They're ignorant. One time, my grandson Seth, when he was 2 years old, his mommy pulled up to my house, and I have a blacktop driveway. It was summertime, and without her even being aware of it, he jumped out of the car really quick as soon as she opened the door. Well, we all have experienced hot blacktop on bare feet, but for a 2-year-old with tender little feet that have no calluses, that was scorching hot. So what would Seth do? Well, first of all, he had no knowledge that blacktop is hot. So there shows his simplicity, him being a simple fool. And then rather than turn around and put his arms up and say, "Mommy, pick me up," he continues to run on the blacktop with everybody trying to chase him down. By the time we got him, he had blisters on the bottom of his feet. It was a trip to the emergency room and so, and thank God he was fine. But to this day, he still remembers. You know, even as a 2-year-old, he has a slight memory of how hot that blacktop can be. That's a simple fool. He just didn't know. One of the hallmarks of the simple fool is they don't see danger ahead. Why don't they see the danger ahead? They've got no experience with it. That's one of the things that when you see a child, they can't predict the future in the sense of they cannot predict the consequences of their actions. Oftentimes, they'll go about and do things that we would look at them and say, "Why would you do that?" But they have no knowledge why not to do it. They've never seen what the damage that can be done. I was working once in the backyard, and Seth loves to work alongside of me. And I asked him to hold a tin snips that I have. I was working on some metal, and I said, "Here, Seth, can you hold this for me?" Literally, not more than 10 seconds. I knew he couldn't cut himself with it. But not more than 10 seconds had I turned around. When I turned back, he had taken that, and he had begun to cut his holes in his T-shirt. Why? He had no understanding of the consequences. He saw, this cuts. This looks like something I should cut. He didn't think about, this will ruin my T-shirt, because he's a simple fool. I think you get the point. The simple fool just is that person that lacks any kind of understanding. They're easily persuaded. A lot of times the simple fool is very susceptible to flattery, and they often have an unguarded mental condition in the sense of they just don't know. So what would be the proper way of dealing with the simple fool? Well, what you need to do is you need to instruct them. And you need to have lots of compassion and patience. That's why in Psalm 19:7 it says, "The law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple." Why do these statutes make the simple wise? Because they provide instruction. The simple learn by instruction and then discipline, exercised over and over and over. In Proverbs 19:25, it says, "Smite a scorner, and the simple will be aware." See, what they can do is when there's a scorner, that's a different type of foolishness that we'll see. But when the simple sees the scorner smited or reproved and corrected, then the simple learn and says, I don't want to do that. I've seen that just in the case of my own grandchildren, where I have to correct one and the other two immediately shape right up. It says in Proverbs 21:11, when a mocker is punished, the simple gain wisdom. When a wise man is instructed, he gets knowledge. Absolutely, because the wise, remember, he wants to learn. And in this case, the simple person sees the mocker, the scorner being punished. He's going to learn. He doesn't want to do that same behavior. We oftentimes could think of simple as the sheep. You know, sheep are just simple. They just don't know. They need a shepherd. They need someone that will guide them, that will herd them to better pasture, better water, that will keep them safe. So our responsibility, whenever we're dealing with people, if it's an area where they lack knowledge, then what we have to do is we need to be able to instruct. And I know in myself, I try to be as aware as I can. Just because I'm knowledgeable in one area does not make me an expert in another. And so be very aware of your limitations. And when you don't know something, you just don't know it. I am a simple fool when it comes to auto mechanics. And I choose to be. I have no desire to work on my car. I work on lots of other things, but I do not like to work in automotive. So what do? I go to someone who knows what to do. And that's what the wise does. Recognize your limitations, know what you don't know, and then take the steps to get around that. Okay, the next type of fool is what I classify as an unreasonable fool. In the Hebrew, this is the word evel. First we had the simple fool, they lack knowledge. Now we're talking about an unreasonable fool. An unreasonable fool's problem is not that they lack knowledge. The unreasonable fool knows what they should do, they just choose not to. It's almost as if with the children, you know, they have been taught you do not lie, but then confronted with the possibility of I can tell the truth or I can lie, when they choose to lie, they're being unreasonable. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. This is the word evel, and it's an unreasonable fool. I think in terms of an unreasonable fool, not as someone who is practicing sinfulness, it's a person who just occasionally commits sinfulness. When we practice it, that shows a level of commitment to it. That's a stubbornness. That's an increasing category. This is the type of person where sometimes I know that I should not necessarily speak in a certain way, but in a moment where I'm pressed, I may just blurt out or act in a certain way that I know is wrong. It's not that I have great desire or intention to do it, but I did do it. I made the choice at some level, whether conscious or not, and it was unreasonable in the sense of it wasn't the righteous path to choose. Proverbs 12:15 says, the way of a fool seems right to him, but a wise man listens to advice. Again, this is the avel. And then in Proverbs 7:22, all at once he followed her like an ox to the slaughter, like a deer stepping to the noose. See, I like to put the pressure on all at once. It's not like it's a real thought-out plan of doing evil behavior. This fool just kind of like all at once. He just followed along. Wow, that looks interesting. Maybe I'll do that. Proverbs 15:5. A fool, an evel, the unreasonable fool, spurns his father's discipline, but whoever heeds correction shows prudence. Oftentimes, this type of fool, I like to think of, instead of that young child, this is almost like the teenager. I'm sorry, I don't mean to insult any teenagers out there, but I know what it's like. We've all been teenagers. You know, you think you know more than you really do know, and you know what you're supposed to do. You just choose many times not to do it. In Proverbs 20, verse 3, it says, it's to a man's honor to avoid strife, but every fool, unreasonable fool, is quick to quarrel. And then also Proverbs 29:9, if a wise man goes to court with a fool, the fool rages and scoffs. There's no peace. See, this is that unreasonable fool, quick to quarrel, just kind of short on the fuse. I know that recently in my own personal life, I feel like I've been under a lot of pressure, personally and professionally. And then what happens is, we've all been there, you're kind of running on emotional low, you're close to the what I call the threshold or the line, and then something very small just kind of tips you, and you speak out rashly. You just are quick to quarrel. Well, that's the unreasonable fool. It's not a committed, consistent pattern of behavior. It's just the circumstances of life at that moment cause you to act in an unreasonable manner. I call it unreasonable because the reasonable thing would be to be wise in all situations. But understanding the weakness of our flesh, we often don't do it. We're just unreasonable. That's God's perspective. Generally, how would you reprove? What would you do if you were dealing with an unreasonable fool? Well, again, because this is not a pattern of behavior, this is an occasional situation where someone acts out in a way of sinfulness. It is sin when we act unreasonable. So the answer to this is Proverbs 10:13. Wisdom is found on the lips of the discerning, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks judgment. Now the rod here is the rod of correction. This is not a rod in the sense of abuse and beating. When we were dealing with sheep, a shepherd would have the sheep. He would use the rod to basically gently push, to poke, to be able to steer the sheep. That's what the unreasonable fool needs. Just as the simple fool needed instruction, at this point, the unreasonable fool needs to be reminded of the right way to go, and then discipline needs to be enforced so that they consistently choose it and interrupt the unreasonable behavior. That's why in Proverbs 14:3 it says, "A fool's talk," the unreasonable fool here, "brings a rod to his back, but the lips of the wise protect him." And then also Proverbs 22:15, "Folly," foolishness, "is bound up in the heart of the child." This folly is referring to, it's a form of the word avel, the unreasonable fool, "but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him." So when dealing with the simple fool, as I mentioned, they need instruction. Now the unreasonable fool, instruction's not what they need. They need some discipline, they need some correction, something to interrupt the behavior. One of the things we have to be very careful, I find myself falling into this pattern, is it doesn't do any good to keep instructing a person if you're not dealing with the simple fool. That works for the simple fool. But for the unreasonable fool, you need to exercise discipline. The third type of fool, the third and final type of fool, because the last two we'll talk about, I believe, are entering into the state of wicked. So the third type of fool is what I call the stubborn fool. Now, what's a stubborn fool? Well, in Hebrew, it's the word kesel, and it really is the largest category of fool in Scripture. As you will see, you know, here we have the unreasonable fool previously that we talked about, the cassette, the evel, and, you know, it's translated as fool. Now we move over to kesel, so the evel is the unreasonable fool. Now we go to kesel, and it's also translated as fool. That's why what I've done in my Bible is I've gone and worked every form of the word avel or kesel, and if it's an unreasonable fool, I put a U on top of it. If it's a stubborn fool, I put an S on top of it. Because they're different categories of people and behavior, and we need to have a good understanding so that we can discern how to properly interact with them. This is a level of foolishness which has just now gotten flat stubborn. It's not a matter of instruction like the simple fool, nor is it a matter of an occasional stepping across a line of sin. This is a person who is actually beginning to participate in evil behavior, and they're being stubborn about it. That's why Proverbs 26:11 says, "As a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats his folly." The word fool here is the stubborn fool, and the emphasis I'm putting on is repeat. This is what the stubborn fool does. They're in a consistent pattern of evil behavior. Proverbs 10:23 says, "A fool, a stubborn fool, finds pleasure in evil conduct, but a man of understanding delights in wisdom." I hope you can see there's a whole level of intensity that has increased at this point. One of the ways I like to think about this is with the unreasonable fool, the previous category. He kind of says in his heart, "Well, I know what I should do, but I'm just not going to do it." This type of fool says, "Well, I know what I should do, I'm not going to do it, and there's nothing you can do about it. No one can change me. I'm going to do what I want to do." See, there's a level of stubbornness. Another way of thinking about stubbornness is pride. That's what's going on. There's an increasing level of pride and arrogance in the heart of this type of fool. In Proverbs 13:19, it says, "A longing fulfilled is sweet to the soul, but fools, stubborn fools, detest turning from evil." See, they detest turning from evil. Wow, this is a level of sinfulness which is greatly intensified. Proverbs 18:2, "A stubborn fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions." I just see there's an obstinacy that has set in. There's a point of rebelliousness that has increased. They tend not to like to have legitimate authority, especially when asked to do anything that inconveniences them. Oftentimes, you will see that they have hatred that's begun to fester in their heart, and they many times will utter slander under their breath. They haven't come full-blown out into the open yet. Proverbs 18:6 says, "A fool's lips bring him strife, and his mouth invites a beating." Again, this stubborn fool, see, there's a level now where the heart is beginning to issue out into his mouth. I believe that the reason God puts so many verses concerning this type of fool is because this is a point that absolutely has to be interrupted. I know that there have been times when I have just been a stubborn fool. I'm a mule. I'm stubborn. I'm going to get my way. I'm going to do it. Nobody's going to tell me different. Well, that is a stubborn fool from God's perspective. And it absolutely needs to be interrupted, because the next stage where it goes to is definitely evil and wickedness. So, again, what would you do? How would you reprove or correct this type of fool? Well, as you can see, they're stubborn. It's almost as if they're a raging bull. So you need to be very, very careful when dealing with this type of foolishness. In Proverbs 26:3, it says, "A whip for the horse, a halter for the donkey, and a rod for the backs of fools." This is not the same fool as we looked at previously with the unreasonable fool, where he got the rod of discipline. This is the stubborn fool. And the equation that this rod is being equated with is a whip and a halter. It's a serious means of discipline. It's boundaries. It's consequences which are being implemented. Proverbs 17:10, "A rebuke impresses a man of discernment more than 100 lashes a fool," the stubborn fool. See, when confronted, these types of fools tend to get into categories of blame shifting, rationalization. They make up excuses. They're just hard to pin down. One of the things that Henry Cloud pointed out, which I've had a witness to, is when you're dealing with this type of fool, what happens is you generally have a feeling of hopelessness. Hopeless because it's hard to pin this person down. Let me give you an example. Let's say I'm dealing with an employee. Thank God we have no employees like this with an STF, but I've been in situations in previous times in business where I have had employees where you give them deadlines or projects that are supposed to be completed. You go and you confront them, and it seems like they've got every excuse in the world rather than accepting the responsibility themselves on why it didn't come to pass. You deal with that. You consistently keep having this pattern come up. Generally, you get and develop a sense of hopelessness. You don't know what to do. Everything you do doesn't seem to correct the situation. So what do you do now? Well, you bring in Charlie and you sit him down and you say, "Charlie, you know, the problem of missed deadlines is no longer the problem. The problem of you not meeting the company's objectives is no longer the problem here, Charlie. You're the problem. So what am I going to do about this, Charlie? What can we do together? Then let the person participate and come up with consequences that they'll agree with. The truth is, 90% of the time, they're probably going to break those same consequences, and then you'll have to terminate them. But that's what you've got to do when dealing with this type of stubborn fool. You've got to set firm and clear guidance. You have to be precise. You've got to explain the points of error. And then it's wise, leave their presence. Just step away. That's why Proverbs 14:7 says, "Stay away from a foolish man, for you will not find knowledge on his lips." It's almost as if you're going to confront this person, and now you've got to be very careful not to get sucked into their program and to participate with them on their level of foolishness. That's why in Proverbs 26:4 it says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you will be like him yourself." If a fool's behavior is such that when he rants and he rages, I get sucked into that with ranting and raging, I'm answering him according to his folly. But in Proverbs 26:5 it says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes." I believe the point here is, in accordance to what he does, you need to answer him. You've got to set clear, precise guidelines, call out the behavior, and show Charlie where he was wrong. But yet, don't get sucked into the situation, or you'll be just like him. You have to use great care when proceeding with this kind of fool, because the truth of the matter is, interruption with this level of foolishness has to take place in their heart. There's not much you can do. It's not a matter of instruction, nor is it a matter of simple discipline. This is a matter where their behavior has to be interrupted by themselves because it's their stubbornness. In summary, let's just think back about this. Many times this stubborn behavior will show up because they're pursuing pleasures and sinfulness, and there's a level of boldness that's now is encroaching into their behavior. A lot of times we will see this manifesting in certain addictive behaviors. It's selfish appetites that remain unchanged. They care little about godly advice or opinions, and a lot of times they will become consumed by their own self-inflicted wounds. Another level that is showing up here with this type of fool is anger. That's why Proverbs 29:11 says, "A fool, a stubborn fool, gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control." And then in Proverbs 14:16, "A wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil, but a fool is hot-headed and reckless." Another thing that you will find with stubborn fools is many times they're passive-aggressive. When I say passive-aggressive, it means they won't come right out and tell you that they disagree, but they're going to act in ways which undermine you and the situation. Proverbs 10:18 addresses that. It says, "He who conceals his hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool." That's passive-aggressive behavior. So, in conclusion, we saw that the wise person is a person who's open to the truth. This second category of people consists of the simple fool, the unreasonable fool, and the stubborn fool. Now, I'd like to move into the last part of this teaching, which is concerning the wicked. There are two types of people that God classifies in the category of wicked. These also our foolish behavior from this perspective that anything that's not wise is foolish. But these two kinds of people have crossed the line. And the distinguishing characteristic that's present in these final two types of people is that there is destruction present in their heart. What do I mean when I say destruction? They have evil intentions. And what happens is they act out in ways which is very destructive. Now, certainly there is some level of destructiveness in all sin with the unreasonable or stubborn fool. But this is a very willful pattern where they intend to inflict damage, hurt, and harm on other people. In Proverbs 14:9, it says, "Fools," speaking of this category, the Hebrew word is lutz. This is a fool. It says, "Fools mock at making amends for sin, but goodwill is found among the upright." The English word fool is used here, but make no mistake, this is not a fool as we've previously discussed. We've crossed over into another category that we will call the wicked or the evil. And the distinguishing thing here is they're mocking. To mock is to speak out, to scorn, to use talk that's boastful, that's throwing barbs, insults, flippant remarks. Previously, the stubborn fool was, "Well, there's nothing you can do. I'm going to do this, and I'm just going to be stubborn in my sinful behavior." Now, with this type of person, what they say is, "Well, I want to do it. There's nothing that you can do to stop me, and you are a fool for thinking that I shouldn't do it." They've engaged their mouths, and they're now also turning back and pointing at you. That's why there's a level of pride and arrogance that has increased, and you'll see this in Proverbs 21:24. God actually says, "The proud and arrogant man, mocker is his name. He behaves with overweening pride." Be very, very careful whenever you are tempted to turn and to speak out with slander and remarks intentionally against another. Now, I know that I've said remarks that are slanderous, that, you know, that are harmful to other people and their reputation. But it's not an intentional pattern of behavior. It's a point of which it's sin. Yes, it is sin. And we all at some time have gossiped about another. In fact, that's the point of Ecclesiastes, where it says, "Every person has spoken out against his master. Don't pay too much attention to people's words." That's not what I'm talking about here. This is a person who is intentionally going around defaming and slandering other people. They are behaving with overweening pride and arrogance. In Proverbs 29:28, it says, "A corrupt witness mocks at justice, and the mouth of the wicked gulps down evil." I mean, they're actually drinking in the evil. It's going down and permeating and festering into their heart. This is a definite increased level of evil and wickedness. In Proverbs 28:24, it says, "He who robs his father or mother and says it's not wrong, he is partner to him who destroys." Now, in a previous teaching where I spoke about the nature of the enemy, one of the terms for God's enemy is the destroyer. We know that it's Satan, the adversary. And so here, this person actually has become a partner of him who destroys. That's a level of evil that very few people would ever intentionally want to enter into. In Proverbs 11:9, it says, "With his mouth, the godless destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge, the righteous escape." Again, what's the distinguishing characteristic that we've crossed over from foolish behavior into wickedness? It's destruction. You will always find destruction present. When confronted, they're going to spend a lot of energy to shift the blame, to discredit the person. It's not a matter enough where they just want to shift it, but they actually now want to come back and discredit the person who's acting godly, who's confronting the behavior. Tough love is absolutely required. When I say tough love, this is the type of person that Paul actually had to put out of the assembly. One of the things that Henry Cloud said is, when dealing with wicked people, the mocker or the next one that we'll talk about, the proper way of dealing with them is lawyers, guns, and money. Now, that may sound harsh, but as I've reflected on that, I see that there is a lot of truth in this. When you're dealing with this type of person, because there's destruction that's present in their heart, they seek to harm, to injure, to hurt. What you'll need to do oftentimes is you may need to get a lawyer to protect you and your rights. You may need to tell them that, "Listen, I'm done having conversation with you. Talk to my attorney." When I say guns, in the sense of you may need the police, you might need to put a protective order, or money, because it's probably going to cost you one way or another. This is the kind of person oftentimes that when terminated or fired from a position will stand up and turn and point their finger and say, I'm going to take you down. And that's exactly what they go seeking to do. There's destruction that's present. That's why Proverbs 22:10 says, drive out the mocker and out goes strife, quarrels, and insults are ended. That's what you need to do. Tough love, lawyers, guns, and money. It's not going to do any good to instruct. It's not going to do any good just to set some boundaries around these people. You've actually got to drive them out of the assembly. In Proverbs 13:1, it says, a wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a mocker does not listen to rebuke. And then also in Proverbs 15:12, a mocker resents correction. He will not consult the wise. These are the kind of people that when confronted will absolutely turn on you. It's almost as if the bull is coming at you and he intends to gore you. That's why in Proverbs 9:7-8 it says, whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. And then in 8, do not rebuke a mocker or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. Oftentimes these kinds of people, the only unity that they will enjoy is when people are aligned with them and their cause. There's no humility, there's a level of pridefulness, and they've actually turned and are now using words in their mouth to sow destruction. And the final type of wicked person here is what we call the Nabal. Now this is also translated from Hebrew, the Hebrew word Nabal. It's also translated as fool, but this is a level of committed foolishness that is absolutely, we are dealing with wicked and evil here. In Proverbs 14:1, it says, for the director of music of David, the fool, the Nabal, says in his heart, there is no God. See, can you see the level of arrogance here? This is, that's evil. That's wicked. It goes on and says, they are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. There is no one who does good. The Nabal is a person who is at the extreme end of foolish behavior to the point where they're consumed in wickedness. Psalm 53:1 says the same as Psalm 14:1. This is the Nabal who says there is no God. They're actually oftentimes working against God. Now they may not think they are, but they are. Because what they're doing is the way they're going about things is hindering God's plans and purposes. Psalm 74:18 says, remember how the enemy has mocked you, O Lord, how foolish people have reviled your name. That's the Nabal again. They're indifferent many times to the pain they cause. They're not affected by the suffering around them that is a result of their behavior. Why? Because they lack empathy. In Isaiah 32:6, it says, for the fool, the Nabal, speaks folly. His mind is busy with evil. He practices ungodliness, spreads error concerning the Lord. The hungry he leaves empty, and from the thirsty he withholds water. See there, that sense of an indifference to pain and suffering around them? Here's the characteristics of the Nabal. It is the most extreme form of fool, and like the mocker, instead of just now speaking out, although the Nabal does speak, he actually acts out with destructive actions. He's gone past mere words. They're considered, from God's perspective, wicked, impious, and vile. There's no amount of warning, correction, or intellectual reasoning with them that will stop them. Their mouths are filled with words that are sponsored by evil. They're committed to evil. They make bold statements against God. These are vain, self-centered attitudes and philosophies, and their conduct reveals a sense of calculated planning and cunning. This is the type of wickedness that was present when Amnon came and raped his sister Tamar, then later was killed by Absalom. That's Nabalish behavior. The behavior of Achan when he was wiped out in the Old Testament. His whole family was wiped out. Achan acted as a Nabal. When the tribe of Benjamin, there were some very grievous crimes that were committed. They were acting Nabalishly. There's also a man actually in the Old Testament that David's men had been guarding his herds. It was a custom in the East. These guys were unemployed. They guarded this man's herds. The man's actual name was Nabal. I find that amazing that a person, parents would name a child Nabal, but maybe they named him one thing and then at some point they realized how wicked and vile he was and they changed his name. Anyway, when David's men come to him to get a just provision from him for all of their labors, he turns around and acts towards them as a Nabal. He rebukes them and reviles them and sends them off. You'll see that the consequences of his behavior a few days later as he ended up dead. But David almost got sucked into this unrighteous response by wanting to annihilate him. He gathers up his 500 or so men and then goes off after this guy. It's like an army coming after a flea. And David was being sucked right into it. When you're dealing with a Nabal, the way to deal with them, stay away. Have nothing to do with them. Cut them off. Remember, just as with the mocker, lawyer, guns, or money, it's not up to us to deal with the Nabal. You've got to turn them over to God. Let God deal with that kind of person. And as I said, there's a level of destruction that's present in these final two people, the mocker and the Nabal. In conclusion, let me just say that it's our desire to be the wise. But to be the wise, we need to distinguish in our hearts when we're acting as a simple fool. When is it that I need instruction? When am I being unreasonable? Is there something where I'm just being reactive to and I need to discipline myself and correct that? Or when am I being stubborn? Are there areas of repeated sinfulness in my life, things that I'm just not willing to let go of that I need to confront myself? Because it's a slippery slope of pride and arrogance, this sinful behavior. If I'm not interrupted when I'm stubborn, then there's the potential I could cross that line and enter into the mocker and potentially the Nabal. Now, again, those are extreme levels, but that's something that we just need to be aware of. And then also another way to apply this is, who are you dealing with? Because God wants us to grow up. He wants us to be mature. Jesus Christ said, go make disciples. He doesn't want a bunch of immature disciples running around. He wants us to understand who we're dealing with, how to behave properly, relationally between ourselves, both within the church and on the outside of the church. And in order to do that, we need to be able to distinguish between the wise, the fool, and the wicked. God bless you.
The teaching you just heard was a presentation of Spirit and Truth Fellowship International. For further study, we encourage you to visit our research website, truthortradition.com. If you would like to get your copy of this teaching on CD or tape, you can go online at our home website, stfonline.org/store, or call us toll-free at 888-255-6189. Again, that's 888-255-6189. God bless you.